A ghostwriter in Cleveland. Cleveland Airport. Night. Donna is weary. We can tell because Paltrow has her character walk slightly slower and wobble from side to side. When the royalty operations clerk, Dwayne King, asks how she is, she only manages an all right, chased with a good-humoured grimace. This isn't the go-getting Donna we've come to know. Camera pan to a stewardess sauntering by in sunglasses, her Nehru-collared uniform a tasteful soft orange. She stops in front of a large Employee of the Month picture of Donna Jensen. She lowers her sunglasses from the bridge of her nose. Reveal, Christine Montgomery. I doubt if the bard himself could choreograph such an interplay of personae. Contrast, the image on the wall, Donna, beaming, confident, an icon of success, while the shattered reality stands 10 feet away, with the viewer of the image, Christine, the dissembler, who purloined the coveted New York route and doth know deep down that her silk stockings should be cladding the feet of that insecure girl from Silver Springs. Thus, Christine meets a version of Donna before re-meeting her moments later. Christine and Ted sit on the floor of Donna's apartment. Christine holds a half-filled wine glass. Ted holds a bottle of beer. The sofa is unoccupied. There's a part-consumed bottle of wine on a low table directly in front of the sofa. Donna enters holding a beer and sits down on the floor. What, we wonder, is wrong with this sofa? After casually mentioning her great apartment in Manhattan and her new expensive hair colour that goes better with Chanel, Christine tells Ted that she would never have made it through training without Donna. The pulse begins to quicken. We are cineasts. We conduct the curvy daggers of swarthy men in eyeliner and receive a chastening open palm from a firm but fair mentor. Of course we find it hard to think of Jason Statham as a scientist or Sean Connery as a person. We simply grit the teeth and muddle through. But we have our limits, and the self-satisfaction of a plainly substandard stewardess, a woman who wouldn't know how to make a duck fart, let alone a buttery nipple, is more than we can bear. Particularly when a vision of stewardly excellence kneels at her feet, forced to hear tales of this coarse prodigal's unfathomable good fortune. Yet this vaunting hubris will be Christine's undoing. First, she tells a story we could call the story of the oversized musical case. Just a note on that, the suggested image of a large wind-up music box must lead to the more likely scenario that Christine is referring to, a case containing a musical instrument. The way Christine lays it out, she's on the New York to Chicago flight when a chap bounds up with an oversized musical case and tries to stuff it into an overhead compartment. How he got it through security is not explained. Our presumption that someone would have asked a man to hand in the item both at the check-in desk and again as he boarded the plane may not square with Christine's testimony, but the anecdote grips and we await the sting in the tale. Christine says she called on the spirit of Donna Jensen and asked herself what this attendant, sans pareil, would have done in her stead. Jensen and Stewart exchange a look. Barreto's camera is there to catch it. The stakes are dizzyingly high. Christine continues. She looked straight at the offending gentleman and said, "Either you check it or you deplane." Donna is aghast. She says she certainly would not have said that, it being one's flight attendantly duty to inform the musical case-carrying miscreant that he had the option of buying another seat at half price as per section 23.4 of the manual. Christine tries to wave away the awkward moment, saying that she can't be expected to remember everything. Donna, sensing blood, presses on. "But it was the last question of the exam," she says. "Surely Christine would remember that." If you aren't on the absolute precipice of your seat by now, you've lost your adrenal glands. Say I have to remember to do something. I will remember for a minute or two after you've told me, then events inevitably overtake. I will need a reminder so close to my actually needing to do the thing that you might be best advised to do the thing yourself. Perhaps Christine is a little like that. She had the whole manual memorized for the morning of the big test, but thereafter the manual is no more part of her cerebellum than her days at her mother's breast, unless for some incestuous reason outside the scope of this drama, she's remained on latch. It's not just Donna who senses something's rotten in Baconland, Denmark. Sharing a sly coup d'oeil with his significant other, Ted asks whether Christine has any of those mini pilot's wings in her bag. His nephew has been hounding him for some. Christine, happy to oblige, empties out her handbag. Barreto's camera tracks in for a closer look, revealing 1. A set of clearly stolen, brand new headphones. 2. An eye mask still in its wrapper. 3. Multiple miniature bottles of spirits. 4. Tissues in a small packet. 5. What looked like mini air freshener, but could be perfume. Now, one might not expect Christine to return her eye mask. Ditto the tissues. Surplus mucus must be staunched. But the headphones are substantial and of the over-ear type, and that's not on. Though how she's plugging them into her Discman, top was lent in 2001, so we find ourselves in a pre-iPod portable media landscape, without an accompanying stereo mini jack socket adapter, I don't know. We cut from Donna's puzzled face to a frenzied dream sequence, but unlike the baroque excesses of a Polanski or Tarkovsky, who might stick on a wide-angle lens and show you the dream, fogged with smoke and inexplicable drizzle, Barreto simply shows Donna half asleep. We know she's having some bad REM because she moves from side to side and occasionally groans. Sometimes the rapier is more effective than the blunderbuss. If Barreto can distill, then distill he will. It's like a partita by Bach. When you have full mastery over one instrument, explore its full resonance. Don't get some bozo to play the bongos at the same time. A fevered Paltrow, a Ruffalo in repose, sleeping the sleep of emotionally absent men everywhere. And an off-screen voice repeating Sally Weston's ghostly blend of attestation and resume, Paris First Class International, are the only ingredients Barreto needs for a dauntingly deep draft of drama. Donna is resolved. Cut to Sally Weston's office, in which the gist is as follows. Curtain up. Wearing a short-sleeve purple polo neck sweater with matching eyeshadow and a plum lip, Donna Jensen is at her wit's end. She looks at Sally, her pleading face looking for a bone, and not the kind you give to your dog. Something just doesn't ring true, Sally. Sure, I'm doing well at the moment. I work hard and I naturally excel. But it's this test. Are we sure that this test was correctly graded? Are we absolutely sure about this? Because it's hard to believe. Could it be a computer fault? We see so many computer faults these days. Luggage is lost, bags misdirected. Perhaps something similar could have happened here. Sally meets her gaze, but her tense jaw, softened only by a nude lip and the lightest brush of foundation, is resolved. No, it couldn't be a computer fault. You see, the thing is that all of those papers are hand-graded. No one is more surprised than me as to the outcome, but we can definitely eliminate the possibility of error. We cut wide. Sally's wearing capri pants, whose softly iridescent gunmetal hue speaks of an elegance beyond those common folk who scrap it out in the scrum of the quotidian. So you, Sally Weston, are telling me, Donna Jensen, that you, Sally Weston, can do nothing. Angle on Sally Weston. The scene plays like gangbusters. Sally makes a call. Moments later, Donna's test arrives via fax. To her horror, the test that comes through is not hers. The eyes are dotted with hearts. The characterful moment we witnessed towards the end of Act 1 pays off masterfully here, catapulting us towards a key Act 2 turning point. But Barreto, our wise guide, fearful that audience members may not have remembered this detail, cuts back to the original test scene. This time, Donna's hopefulness, New York, here I come, is savagely undercut by Barreto's camera as it sees Donna's test paper intercepted by Christine, who sneakily changes their respective candidate numbers. Christine's sly stroke to the bottom of the 7 in 1047 makes it a 1041, while an insouciant flick transforms her own candidate number, 1041, into Donna's 1047. Rarely is the term cunt appropriate for a trainee stewardess, but at this particular juncture, it's hard to think of any other appropriate word. Fortunately for Christine, Donna writes one with a single downward stroke. If Donna had used serif, i.e. a top tick or horizontal line at the bottom, Christine might not have been able to make her amends so smoothly and elegantly. Perhaps a lesson to be taken from this iniquitous infringement is to adopt, in one's own life, a type of script that cannot be easily altered to further the nefarious aims of cunts. Cut back to the present. Donna is shocked. What's more, she's flummoxed. She articulates the thoughts of anyone still watching. "I can't believe it," she says. And we believe her. Just as the butter lover struggles to comprehend how similar to butter "I can't believe it's not butter" is, for those of you who don't know what "I can't believe it's not butter" is, it's an oil-based bread which, if refrigerated, can pass safely from one generation to the next. Just as the butter lover struggles to comprehend how similar to butter "I can't believe it's not butter" is, Donna senses rebel from the revelation that Christine is not her friend. "I can't believe she's not my friend" would be the title of the spreadable version of Donna's current feeling, were it to come in a tub. Donna trusted Christine, and she says as much. She also mentions the fact that the two of them were, in her estimation at least, and to use a current parlance, besties. Donna sounds a final grace note of stupefaction. "I can't believe she steal my test." And yet Christine has stolen her test. We've seen it with our own eyes. The eyes of Barreto's camera. We have all been betrayed, though few more than me, and the scene is a sickening reminder of the depravity to which humanity can sink when unchecked by the iron rod of the law. Sally's mind is now a synaptic firing range. She recalls the night she had the trainees to dinner. Something terrible happened, an appalling discourtesy. She must have repressed the memory, so deep was the cut. Someone took her aeroplane soaps. The crestfallen look in Donna's eyes tell us more than the most anguished soliloquy. Turns out Sally does begrudge someone taking 7 or 8 bars of novelty aeroplane soap. Now convinced that a grave injustice has been perpetrated, Sally stands up quickly and walks around her large desk, gesticulating to convey urgency. Sally wants Donna to retest and fast. Fortunately, there's a group testing next week. If Donna does as well as Sally thinks she will be a pip to reassign her. The question is, how soon can Donna leave? And then we realize. Ted. What the hell do we say to Ted? Donna has a decision that she simply must make, and Sally Weston is not afraid to say that out loud. It's Donna's life, and Sally is careful to acknowledge that fact. She does not own Donna. These are two articulate Caucasians in a peer relationship discussing how best to plan destiny. But the decision weighs on Donna. This is what you might call a dilemma, and it will call for much eye moistening, hanging of the head, and staring off into the middle distance. As soon as Donna leaves, Sally telephones internal security and puts a ghostwriter on Christine. Oddly paranormal nomenclature for a person who observes and reports on employee behaviour. Within seconds of screen time, the operative spies Christine loading up her handbag with company swag. These scenes are handled with brutal efficiency. Barreto knows that the audience's collective heart is pounding like a jockey's balls on a saddle. Ted, 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 Ted. Donna must face that marvellous man. And it's going to tear us in twain.